Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail.
Welcome to this edition of the Retail Focus Podcast. I'm Trent Kling for Leighton Behind the Scenes, welcoming you to the podcast one day early. Tomorrow I will be without internet in all likelihood, so wanted to go ahead and get it uploaded a day before we typically do. Now, in this week's episode, a couple of quick news stories. We'll start by picking up where we left off last week, looking ahead at Tractor Supply's early week earnings call. We will cover a little bit of that, as well as a deal in the independent grocery space. We'll also look ahead at Target's latest store within a store partnership. Our interview guest is Rod Sides of Deloitte. He has joined the podcast before, but Rod is the vice chairman of Deloitte LLP and their leader for U.S. wholesale, distribution, and retail. And he'll be joining us to discuss their back-to-school and back-to-college surveys, an annual tradition for them. Some positive numbers, I think, there for retailers, but they're hearing some negative things, perhaps, from retailers on the supply chain side. It's always great to have Rod join the show and bring the perspective that such in-depth research that Deloitte does brings to the table. So let's go ahead and start with that obligatory reminder that if you like the Retail Focus podcast, you can give us a rating on any podcast listening service. Those ratings do help others, of course, to find us. You can also check us out on social media at Retail Podcast on both Instagram and Twitter, where Leighton will be periodically uploading things or retweeting things as he sees fit. So, as we mentioned, we'll kick off with Tractor Supply's earnings call this week. And like I said, this is what we looked ahead to on last week's show as a quick recap from that segment from last week. Fact set analysts expected negative comps for Tractor Supply's second quarter after their comps for last year's second quarter were up 30%. Versus 2019. However, there was no negativity to be found in this year's second quarter. People continue to be spending money in rural areas and on the outskirts of urban areas. Comps, rather than being negative, were up 10.5% year over year. Net sales increased 13.4% as a product of those double-digit comp increases, as well as new store development. You know, one could have expected that ticket would at least decrease versus a 2020 that saw massive ticket sizes for them. That, too, was not the case. Despite all of those big ticket items that they sold last year, their average ticket increased year over year by 6%. Traffic increased 4.5%, so maybe a little bit lower than could have been expected, but more than offset by that increase in ticket size. Their net sales mark for the quarter was $3.6 billion, and that set a record, as also could be expected for them. Also a record, their customer retention numbers. We'll talk about those here in a moment. A quick note regarding those new stores that I mentioned. They opened 11 net new Tractor Supply Company stores and closed a net of 3 PetSense stores. They closed 4, opened 1 in the corner. Chain-wide, they now have 2,129 stores now versus 2,061 a year ago. So they continue that gradual increase in store count. Really not looking at too terribly much, maybe just 2 to 3% year over year. But it's been pretty consistent for them as they continue to grow their brick and mortar footprint. And as in some parts of the country, we continue to see that urban to rural migration that kind of reverses what's been happening over the last 50 years. Like I said, not an entire U.S. phenomenon there, but at least in some parts of the country, you are seeing that. And, you know, going into the call, Tractor Supply, I think that's one of the companies that we'd worry about taking a margin hit with those rising fuel costs that we've been discussing. You got these locations oftentimes in far-flung places where general merchandisers, the larger ones, the likes of Walmart, for example, they don't really tread in those areas. And, you know, that was indeed the case, if only mildly. Their gross margin rate decreased 67 basis points, largely as a result of those higher transportation costs and getting to those further out areas. However, their relaunch of their loyalty program also contributed somewhat, based on internal marketing and additional spend surrounding that. That loyalty program, by the way, called the Neighbors Club, now has over 21 million members. After their relaunch, they were able to gain 5 million members, an increase nearly 35% over the last 12 months. However, good news for them, spending on selling, general and administrative expenses was down just slightly as a percentage of sales, 6 basis points. So we're talking a very slight decrease there. So positive news, if you want to look at it that way, on the margin front for Tractor Supply. Now let's talk some of those trends. They didn't mention those Carhartt store within a store concepts that we talked about looking ahead to the earnings call too. They didn't mention it, nor were they asked about it. The big topic on their call was their Neighbors Club loyalty program. Now they switched to a points-based platform that is said to be slightly more popular with consumers. This was credited, in fact, with fueling their 12-month customer retention numbers, which were well above the company's historical marks. New customers, Tractor Supply Company, by the way, are signing up to this loyalty program at a 30% rate. That's also above where it was at last year. Let's talk about that retention as it pertains to those customers coming back and shopping at Tractor Supply repeatedly after signing up for Neighbors Club. Neighbors Club member retention rates are at 80%. We're not talking about membership in the program there like we would if we were talking about a club retailer like Sam's Club or Costco, but just those members are likely to make a return trip within 12 months at an 80% clip. Club members now account for 65% of sales and make 2 more trips on average per quarter to stores than non-members. So you get a look at just how valuable these particular customers are for Tractor Supply Company. And their most valuable customers, which would be their Neighbors Club Premium Plus customers, that retention rate is running over 95% on a 12-month basis. So very high retention rate for those loyalty customers. We would expect that, of course. Your most loyal customers are the ones that are going to shop there most often, but they've really been able to leverage this program as something that especially the Premium Plus customers see as a tangible benefit. Specifically, they called out actually poultry customers as having the highest retention rates. If you think about it a little bit, yeah, maybe that makes sense. After all, you can buy new chicks every year. You need poultry feed. That's an easy place to go in terms of Tractor Supply. If you're in an urban setting, particularly, you're going to need that poultry feed versus having them, you know, feed in the lawn and the like. So this makes a little bit of sense if you squint at it, but they just said, hey, look, our poultry customers are some of our most loyal customers throughout the company. Now, their CUE products, also called their consumable, usable, and edible products, had an outstanding quarter as well. And this is where those poultry customers come in addition. Poultry and livestock feed, along with dry dog food, all comped out over 25% sales increases year over year. This was, by the way, their 5th consecutive quarter for these products where they comped out over 15%. And this ties, when we're talking about dog food, not only into pet adoption rates, but trends we discussed last week with more rural area residents kind of returning to livestock and an urban trend surrounding raising poultry. If you're anywhere near Instagram or TikTok or any of those platforms, you see a lot of younger people in urban areas that are beginning to raise poultry either for eggs or for the meat. So it's a kind of an interesting dynamic. But again, if you live in a certain area, you might be able to find that at a Walmart, but predominantly you're going to be going to Tractor Supply for that poultry feed. Now, Tractor Supply does refer to livestock and poultry products as being in their homesteading category. As a whole, their homesteading category did very well this year over last year, continued to see good general momentum here, and that was a category that saw a flush of business as the pandemic kind of set on last year. I think people kind of realized, hey, if we can cultivate maybe our own eggs in our own backyard, we don't have to deal with some of those supply chain shortages they were seeing at the height of the pandemic panic buying. Finally, unexpected for Tractor Supply Company were the big ticket categories such as mowers, safes, utility vehicles, and trailers. Those comped out positive year over year. They assumed there would be a step back after They really popped in sales during the pandemic, but this was not the case. Zero-turn mowers, by the way, leading that category. Now, in terms of projections, the solid quarter was encouraging enough for management to raise their full-year outlook. They increased net sales expectations by about 5%. Comps previously expected to come in at 5 to 8% increases for the year are now projected to increase by 11 to 13%, and their bottom line projections were increased on either end of their range by nearly 10%. As we mentioned, another banner quarter for Tractor Supply Company. We'll wrap the news segment with a quick story that slipped through the cracks. Late last week, we transitioned from farm and home retail to grocery, where it was announced that C&S Wholesale Grocers has entered into a provisional deal to purchase another food wholesaler in Piggly Wiggly Midwest. Now, I say food wholesaler, they do have some brick and mortar stores that they operate, and we'll talk about that in a second. Now, C&S Wholesale Grocers counts among its customers over to 7,700 independent supermarkets, chain supermarkets, military bases, and other outlets based in New Hampshire they are. And this particular deal includes 25 actual stores and another 84 franchise stores with whom they get that distribution deal with in Wisconsin and Chicagoland. So 11 of the stores are corporate Piggly Wiggly stores, 14 are Butera Market stores in the Chicagoland metro, and then the franchise stores are all under that Piggly Wiggly banner. For now, the deal includes the continued operation of Piggly Wiggly Midwest, or their current distribution centers and offices at the very least. Additionally, as a condition of the deal, Butera Market entered into a commitment to retain C&S as their distributor going forward. Now, this deal, what it does is it would reunite Piggly Wiggly Midwest and Piggly Wiggly Carolina. C&S already owns the latter, in fact, and Piggly Wiggly in and of itself, if you have several hours to spend on their history, they're a fascinating study on really the fracture of a grocery brand, because it's something that oftentimes throughout the course of history, you've had independent operators, but at one point in time, they were sold off to chains such as Safeway. It's ironic that now a lot of the intellectual property and some of the brick and mortar stores throughout the U.S. is held by one company again in C&S. And really the catalyst to this was Piggly Wiggly's 2003 bankruptcy. But we're looking 18 years later and we continue to get the melding together of these Piggly Wiggly divisions. Now, C&S licenses the brand to over 500 independently owned markets throughout the U.S., although most of the stores, it's known predominantly as Southeast Grocer. However, Wisconsin, a big base for them. Illinois, another pretty big base for Piggly Wiggly. And they have stores as far from really the southeastern United States as Oklahoma to the west and Minnesota to the north. And in this case, Piggly Wiggly Midwest, if you want to think of it this way, they're essentially a retail co-op. It's kind of similar to Piggly Wiggly Alabama, which last counting served around 270 stores, but of course that number fluctuates on a yearly basis. In any case, C&S seems to have been experiencing success with their Carolina operations and their distribution operations as well to many Piggly Wiggly operators, so makes some sense here that they would want to vertically integrate further. And I think this deal is kind of a symbol of where we've gone now in terms of the question between segmenting out businesses within grocery and the vertical integration. The grocery landscape in the last 5 years, it's been an odd mix of some companies seeking to divest brick and mortar in favor of focusing on distribution. You look at Super Value certainly as being one such case. And then other companies seeking more vertical integration, as we have here with C&S. But the trend we've seen really over the last 14, 15 months, really ever since the pandemic, seems to be moving back towards vertical integration post-COVID, because the value of brick and mortar grocery became apparent to a lot of these companies that had both distribution and those brick and mortar operations. We talk about another similar company on the podcast here in Spartan Nash, and that's a company that, again, has looked to acquire, has, again, looked to build their base. Now, the timeline for this deal being done is fairly quick. It's expected to be finalized at the end of July. You look here, not much in the way of regulatory worries. Groceries, pretty diverse in the country as far as retail operations go. Not as diverse, we'll say, as like maybe it was in 1970, but more diverse than most retail sectors. And again, no shareholders to worry about here as well. So an interesting coming together of two grocery parties where it makes absolute sense and it brings banners even further under one company. Now, coming up after this short break, we'll be joined by Rod Sides, again, Vice Chairman of Deloitte LLP. Rod will join us to discuss their recent back-to-school and back-to-college surveys, along with not only some of the numbers, but some of the buying habits we might see during the fall from not only the students, but their parents as well. While retailers turned their attention to back to school and back to college months ago, we're starting to see these sections make their way into the seasonal portions of retail stores. And as always, it's important to look at consumer sentiment surrounding a time of year that is very, very important for retailers and their bottom line. Joining us to discuss the findings of their yearly back to school and back to college surveys is Rod Sides, Vice Chairman of Deloitte LLP, and U.S. retail and wholesale and distribution leader. Rod, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be with you again.
Now, first of all, can you give our listeners a bit of an overview of the history of both of these surveys, both in terms of just how long you've been doing it, longitudinal trends that you've seen, and then also how you go about collecting the data?
Sure. So this is the 14th year in which we've done our back-to-school, back-to-college series of surveys, and generally what we'll try to do is talk to about 1,200 consumers for back to school, close to 1,000 for back to college, and try to get a sense of how are people going to spend, how are they feeling about the economy, what does that translate into in terms of spend, etc. You know, we normally see a slight uptick year over year in terms of spending. We have for the last 14, 15 years, and this year we're going to find it's much bigger than we anticipated and probably bigger than we've seen in the past, largely, I think, as a result of the pandemic.
Yeah, and let's talk about the pandemic, because we're into basically year two of pandemic back to school and back to college buying. What are some trends that seem to be maybe cementing themselves in the current landscape?
Well, there's a couple things that kind of jump off the page. First is the mix of in-store versus online shopping. So historically, back to school, back to college had been an in-store type experience. Last year, with the shutdowns and the pandemic really kind of in full force at the time we went back to school, we found that it really decreased, and the amount of spending in store dropped dramatically last year. So we kind of expected that just based on the number of shutdowns that were out there, et cetera, but that trend continues. So if I think about it, you know, about 42% of the spending, give or take, is supposed to be in store. The rest is going to be online, which is really interesting to us to see those lines converge.
Now, let's talk about where people expect to shop, because obviously e-commerce is going to be a big category, but many other retail categories seem to be seeing an uptick from last year, especially with back to school. You had pandemic conditions obviously affecting store trips last year, of course, but I know looking at the data, dollar stores, thrift stores are actually two such categories that might not be top of mind when it comes to this type of shopping. Where are people expecting to shop in 2021 for back to school as it pertains to brick and mortar?
Well, I think you hit a nail on the head. I mean, mass merchants always have done really well in this time just because they offer so many different options. But it is interesting to see a lot of the electronic stores jumping up, especially given the importance of tech. And then the dollar stores, especially for traditional school supplies, seem to be a new and rising destination for a lot of folks.
And let's mention technology. That was a big category, of course, last year, a rise in schooling from home. How is this year shaping up versus last year on that technology front?
Well, we're seeing it go up about 37% year over year, which is really surprising to many of us because we thought, well, parents had already purchased those PCs to be able to do school from home or those tablets, et cetera. But now what we're finding is there's tremendous growth, and the number of folks buying in those categories is way up. That was probably the most surprising thing because, you know, we've seen a rise in year over year, the number of folks buying in those categories, and in both cases, close to 10%. Electronic gadgets, I think, was up to about 11%, 12% year over year, where computers were up in terms of number of participants by about 9%. So we're seeing many more people start to buy in those categories. So that's really driving a lot of that growth.
And it seems like on that subject of technology, one follow-up I wanted to ask about was the fact that not a lot of this technology, at least the bigger items, the bigger ticket items, people expect to purchase in store. It seems like a lot of this seems to be flowing online. What are some of your findings as far as where people specifically are looking to purchase these big ticket technology items?
Well, it's really interesting. It's a pretty interesting mix because online continues to do really well. You know, for the lower income cohort, which is probably 50,000 below, mass does okay in that particular category. But we've seen a lot of the electronic stores jump back up this year and become a favorite destination for many of those items. So those are the kind of the big three for where we see tech over the course of the current year. And it's interesting to see the rebound again of the electronic stores because they had declined over the last several years in terms of importance to the consumer.
Overall, we always talk about the main considerations people have when choosing where to buy, how to buy, that type of thing. Back to school, back to college, of course, no different. When we're talking about these decisions that parents in particular are making, what are some considerations they put into play when choosing where and how to purchase these supplies?
What's interesting is price is always seems to be at the top of the list, and it is this year as well. Folks are looking for a great deal, looking for discounts that matter, et cetera. And then also product quality. So that continues to be a big driver as well. You know, the whole notion of convenience is something that has become kind of the third leg of the stool for the retail experience. And so folks certainly want to leverage a lot of the experiences they had in the pandemic, whether it be buy online, pick up in store, buy online, curbside pickup. Certainly buy online and return to store is something that's a feature that most consumers are looking for. So a lot of the stopgap measures that were put in place by retailers last year to try to drive traffic are going to have to continue to do it if they're going to attract the customer.
All right. So we've talked a little bit about back to school. I want to turn our attention to back to college because this is a cohort that doesn't get ignored by retailers, but sometimes it gets ignored by the media a little bit. What are some specific categories among the back to college age group that we can expect to see growth for in 2021?
That's interesting. We expect to see certainly technology continues to be a big driver and big part of the story as we go into that. But, you know, a lot of the housewares to be able to outfit dorm rooms, et cetera, they're making a comeback this year. What we're finding at back to college, it's very much a middle-class type story. And what does that mean? Middle-income families are ranging from $50,000 to $100,000 in household income. They really pulled back in 2020 as they were heading into the market. And what we found is they've come roaring back in 21, and they are driving most of the growth in this particular set of categories.
You know, diving into the numbers, I think it was so interesting to me to read about you back to college and back to school. There seems to be a little bit of a split in terms of social media usage, in terms of leveraging other digital tools that are out there. What were some of your findings as far as maybe other potential divides between back to school shoppers and back to college shoppers?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because it was a really interesting compare and contrast between those. So if we buy into the premise that the back to school parent is a little bit younger, probably 10 years or so, than maybe the average back to college, what we're finding is adoption of new technologies and use of social media is almost 2-to-1 higher with the back to school parent than the back to college parent, which is really interesting. So when we ask people the kinds of use of social media, what we're finding is that, you know, about 41% of the folks that have kids in back to school, we're going to use social media in some way. So either to look at reviews, to locate product, et cetera. When you get to the back to college group, it's only about 29%. But the more interesting thing is how they're using technology and emerging technology. And so what we're finding is there's almost a 2-to-1 discrepancy with the exception of using digital wallets. They both seem to be using digital wallets a little more than in the past. But in terms of using things like voice assisted shopping, et cetera, the back to school shopper uses it 2-to-1 really over what the back to college shopper is doing. So it's interesting to see how just that few years of digital adoption is really impacting how parents are using the technology.
Wanted to wrap up with a couple of different overall notes from the survey. One of the more interesting things, and something that we don't really talk about here on the show as it pertains to back to school, is a question you asked about pre-configured kits. I was wondering if you could explain to our audience what pre-configured kits are as it pertains to back to school and how this might be important to retailers as the seasonal season is upon us.
Yeah, well, for most of us who've had kids to go through school in the last, say, 10 years, generally the teachers will have kind of a list of things that they would like you to purchase. So, you know, pens, pencils, glue, staplers, you know, scissors, et cetera. And so they'll provide that list. Here's what you need. Here's the number of notebooks you need. And it can be pretty specific to that. And so as a parent, you get to go on the scavenger hunt looking for all those items across your favorite retailers. Well, what some of the retailers have started to do is to get those lists and go ahead and pre-configure those. So all the things that are on there, they will go ahead and package up, have it in kind of one kit, if you will, for the parent to buy and make it easier. And so it's a whole convenience play, and there's several retailers who have done that working with local school systems. What's really interesting this year is that the number of folks who said they're interested in using those kits continues to climb. But the more interesting finding there is that the reason people are looking for it is certainly convenience. That's really important. But a lot of folks are looking to support the local PTA, the local school system, the local community. And they see the purchasing of the kits and allowing a little bit of profit margin to go back into the community. And that's a big part of why people are moving down that path this year. And I think given the challenges we've seen over the last 18 months, to me, it's really heartening to see folks wanting to invest in their communities and find ways, you know, to help the local school system. So for us, that was kind of the interesting thing that we found this year as we asked the question.
And one more question about the shoppers before we move on to a quick question about the retailers. But as far as the shoppers are concerned, we're starting to see, it seems like, optimism pick back up at least year over year. We're starting to see economic conditions in the household pick back up. Where are shoppers at now versus last year, just in terms of confidence, in terms of just the money they have to spend in each household?
Well, I think that's a really exciting part this year is, when we talk to people about their confidence in the economy, about 55% said they were more confident than last year. That's up from 17%. So clearly we were all worried about kind of the future trajectory, kind of given where we were. And with that, about 78% said that their household financial situation was better or the same as it was last year. So again, that was up year over year from 71%. So, you know, great news is I think we have a consumer that has saved a fair amount of money in the last year. You know, people didn't travel as much. They couldn't go out, et cetera. And so they've got a little more powder, if you will, to go spend in the marketplace. And I think a lot are looking to create a great season for their kids to go back to school. Because I know a lot of us feel like that perhaps the kids didn't get the full experience last year. And I know, you know, as a parent, we want to make sure the kids are getting off to the right start as they go into the current school year.
So we spent most of the conversation talking about the consumer in this case, but I did want to ask our last question here today about the retailer. And we've heard retailers, earnings calls through the media, what have you, generally note continued supply chain clogs just in terms of day-to-day operations, not even in terms of seasonal sales. What were some of the things that you're hearing from retailers as far as back to school, back to college is concerned as it pertains to potential supply chain issues?
Well, those issues are real, as have been reported. As I talk to our clients, generally speaking, that, you know, they're getting the goods, but the goods are coming in late. You know, in certain instances, you know, they're missing big portions of the season, et cetera. I think that's also driving the consumers to shop a little earlier. About 59% of the total back-to-school effort we expect to be done by the end of July, believe it or not. And that moves up about 2 weeks year over year. But retailers are having a big challenge in terms of making sure they can get the right supply and then being able to move that out quickly into the marketplace is a real challenge for them. I think it's going to take some time for that to work its way out. But it really doesn't matter the class of goods that you're seeing. So, you know, happening in apparel and many of the other categories that we included in our study.
Once again, Rod Sides, Vice Chairman at Deloitte LLP. Thank you so much for joining us here today to discuss these surveys.
My pleasure.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
We thank Rod for joining us on the show. And if you want links to each of those survey results, you can check it out in the show notes for this week. Click on through. It's a good way to spend an hour or so. They've got great presentations that accompany their raw numbers. They do a good job with it, not only with the infographics, but just making sure that they're presenting to you the most meaningful numbers rather than things that didn't really move the needle year over year. Well, it's time for the Looking Ahead segment, and this week we're looking ahead at something that'll be launching actually just days from now, Ulta Beauty, their store-in-store concept with Target. This is not the first time Target's done a store-in-store, or even, if you want to call it this, an island in-store, as we saw with Vineyard Vines a few years ago. Target has had a tendency to dive into some of these partnerships, but really excited here because you're talking not only a titan of general merchandise in Target, but really an absolute leader in the beauty space in Ulta Beauty. Now, their numbers maybe not quite where they were back in 2015, 2016, as far as fast acceleration of sales, where you were seeing, compared to other retailers, you know, massive double-digit leaps in comps, not really seeing their sales go up that much compared to the other retailers out there now, but still a very solid company on very strong footing and great brand recognition. Obviously, these two companies are seeing some crossover, some middle in the Venn diagram between their customer bases. So it's very simple here. We're looking ahead to how this partnership goes. This will be taking place in more than 100 locations. So you look at the Target locations throughout the country, of course, they have a lot of locations throughout the country. So 100 really just a drop in the bucket. However, if this goes well, as expected, they're looking to scale it up to about 800 Target stores over the next few years. And the cool thing, at least for shoppers, is that they can get points towards both loyalty programs, Target Circle, and Ultimate Rewards there. We just talked in the first segment about Tractor Supply's loyalty program, loyalty becoming a big thing that's on consumers' minds. So that'll help to maybe ease consumers' worries about that combo a bit. But interested to see not only how this impacts traffic at Target, see if it impacts ticket size upwards, as one might think, but also interested from Ulta's perspective to see if it cannibalizes their brick and mortar stores at all, because you often see an Ulta, especially in larger strip centers alongside a Target. You wonder if, obviously, the decision might be made to not put the store in store locations there in the Target, but you do wonder if there's a possibility for cannibalization there a little bit. Hasn't proved out necessarily with other store inside a store concepts that we've seen, but in this one, might be a little bit different because there is so much crossover between that Target core customer and the Ulta core customer. So I think this partnership very much worth keeping an eye on, as every partnership that Target does is worth keeping an eye on. We've seen a lot of them designed to last for just short periods of time, as in the case of the Vineyard Vines one, but this one seems to be a bit more permanent, and we'll see if it works for Target in the same way that Sephora boosted JCPenney's bottom line, has boosted it over the last 5 years or so. Well, that'll do it for us here on the Retail Focus podcast. Now, coming up next week, just to preview next week's interview, we'll be joined by Ned Hayes. Ned is the CEO of Snowshoe, and he'll be joining us to discuss a very unique pilot program his company has with Olympia, Washington. Snowshoe has rolled out an app called Go Downtown. They partner with over 200 Olympia downtown retailers and retailers around that local area. I think it's a fascinating pilot. He'll discuss about implementing that pilot, but also some individual cases in which they were able to work with retailers to make sure that that loyalty program was going to work for them. I think it's a fascinating interview and a program that we may see rolled out in some way, shape, or form in other cities throughout the United States. Well, for Leighton Behind the Scenes, I'm Trent saying so long. Until next week, we'll see you about 8-9 days from now.
This has been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at retailfocuspodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.